DW.
Celui qui se prend très souvent pour Jules César doit savoir que la chute de Napoléon n'est pas du hasard.
Malian singer Master Sumi, rapping that those who think they're on top like Julius Caesar should also know that Napoleon's downfall was no coincidence. His track, The Power of Mali, was released around the time of the recent coup, and it can be interpreted two ways: a reckoning with the elite that was swept out of office, or as a warning to the military, which has been in power since August 18th.
Malien et Malien.
Malians, with you, we give the country back its greatness and its regional and international recognition.
That's coup leader and the current vice president of the transitional government, Colonel Assimi Goïta. He says the new leadership wants to heal a country that is badly damaged. That's how their agenda has been laid out so far. Colonel Goïta also says they want to work with civil society, political bodies and religious communities. State TV programming is saturated with praise for the outstanding military leaders who have formed a National Committee for the Salvation of the People. Just a short time earlier, on the night of the coup, a tired and tense-looking President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta announced his resignation in a televised address. The 75-year-old told viewers he had no choice. Elements within the army wanted him to step down, and he didn't want bloodshed.
At this specific moment, I would like to communicate, while thanking the Malian people for their support over these long years, for the warmth of their affection, that I have decided to resign from all my functions. From this moment, and with all the legal consequences, the dissolution of the parliament and the government. May God help and bless Mali.
On the day of the coup, the head of state was detained by soldiers at his residence in the capital Bamako, along with Prime Minister Boubou Cisse. Soldiers in armoured vehicles had stormed Kati military base early in the morning, taking control before setting off for the capital. Scores of people later came out onto the streets to cheer on the mutineers, like this demonstrator.
We are here to support our army because they have decided to take matters into their own hands and liberate the people. We don't have schools, electricity, water, or roads. No health system, really. The people have suffered enough.
Many people celebrated President Keïta's resignation in the streets of Bamako. For months, the M5 RFP protest movement had been demanding he step down. Officially called the Movement of June 5th, Rally of Patriotic Forces, after the date of the first protests it organised, it's a broad alliance with support from opposition figures, influential religious leaders and civil society groups. They accused Keïta of corruption, manipulating elections and failing to tackle the country's jihadist insurgency. For those reasons, many Malians backed the coup. Here's what Issa Kao Jim, one of the protest group's members, said at the time.
The M5 RFP protest movement isn't made up of specific political parties, unions and associations, but of the majority of the Malian people. So we support the security forces under the leadership of Assimi Goïta and all his comrades. For us, the most important thing is to come together and ensure that there are appropriate ways and means for a peaceful democratic transition that protects the higher interests of the nation. There is no need to rush.
But much of that euphoria and patience has since evaporated. A transitional legislative body will be in place for an 18-month period until elections are held. Meanwhile, the M5 RFP has raised concerns about the transition and says it hasn't been properly involved in the process. One of the movement's members, Chogel Kokala Maiga, says that despite the military junta's pledge to act in the interests of Malians, many things indicate it'll just be business as usual.
We have the sense that old methods have returned, and the M5 RFP movement does not accept going back to the old conditions that we fought against.
The Transitional Council, he adds, is dominated by the military and doesn't include members of the protest movement.
Today we have a military government composed of soldiers. The civilians in the government were chosen by the military, and they want a national assembly in which the members are appointed and led by the military. The protest movement cannot be complicit while a military regime is installed that doesn't serve Malians, democracy or the military.
Malian political scientist Burema Mamadou Kone warns that growing dissatisfaction among the public could soon be directed at the coup leaders, especially given that they weren't democratically elected and that there's been no improvement in the security situation since they came to power.
Nothing has changed. Let's take the example of the village of Farabougou. How could the military fail for more than a month to surround a village like that and liberate the population from the jihadists? That shows there's a leadership and coordination problem in the army and the command staff.
Farabougou, a village in northern Mali, made headlines in October. For weeks, it had been sealed off from the outside world by armed groups. It was eventually liberated by the army, but critics said that intervention came far too late. Thomas Schiller of Germany's Konrad Adenauer Foundation in Bamako says cases like Farabougou show that the Malian military is currently more focused on the political transition than the security situation.
The military junta chief and current vice president, Colonel Goita, is the head of the special forces. And if you look now, he's driving around here in Bamako under guard of his own special forces. Then, of course, you do wonder, given the tense security situation, whether they wouldn't actually be better deployed elsewhere, rather than as personal protection for the military junta's top brass.
Schiller says that even before the coup, Mali's army was part of the problem. The military had long been plagued with allegations of corruption, reports that came from soldiers themselves. Its units are frequently hit by terror attacks, and that's also because Mali's army is considered inadequately trained and poorly equipped, an easy target for terrorists. Schiller says it's a homegrown problem.
A very good example here is the real estate business, where an officer builds houses or other things with the help of his own soldiers. And that's why this army is an extremely divided force. There's not only the danger that soldiers in the field might defect to the terrorist enemy or pursue activities during their time of service that they shouldn't. There are officers who aren't on the front lines with their troops, but in the next biggest city, while their unit is being led by a junior.
And that's evident when you look at the list of fatalities, Schiller says. For example, there are rarely high-ranking military officers among the soldiers killed in terrorist attacks. That's another reason why Mali's army is divided, he explains, because senior officers don't stay with their troops on the front line. Corrupt military leaders also send too few soldiers into battle and still pocket the pay for a larger group, with fatal consequences. And the soldiers that are sent out aren't properly equipped.
That has an effect on the rank-and-file soldiers, because they say, why should we, with very poor equipment, with no assurance that our family will be taken care of if something happens in combat, why should we put our lives on the line while our officers are in the capital?
Warum sollen wir unsere Haut dazu Markte tragen, während unsere Offiziere in der Hauptstadt sitzen?
According to Schiller, the military leaders who have seized control are part of this old power structure and have so far made little effort to reform the army. Several months after the coup, Mali is fighting battles on many fronts, and in one crucial area, it's still falling short. There's been little change in the north of the country, where terrorists are rampant and the state has no visible presence. That's a big problem, says political scientist Burema Mamadou Kone. The coup was Mali's fourth since independence in 1960, and the country is again losing time that could be devoted to important reforms. The Malian people are paying the price for this. About half of Malians live in extreme poverty, And Kone says it's a breeding ground for political crises and extremism, adding to the possibility of more coups in the future.
Why do we have the problem with so many coups? Because we have poor governance. With a better distribution of resources, the fight against poverty would give the population access to basic services and create more jobs. Even the young people who would otherwise take to the streets and demonstrate would get jobs. We have to tackle the fundamental problems: economic, social, educational, development.
Mali's political stability also has serious implications for neighboring African states. They're concerned about the insurgency spilling across their borders, that Mali will become a domino corrupting the entire region. Europe, meanwhile, doesn't want a huge area racked by terrorism on its doorstep. Mali is considered a crucial state in the fight against the spread of terrorism in the region. And that's likely why the international community accepted the military coup fairly soon, after it had initially been condemned by the UN, the EU, and Germany. The Economic Community of West African States, which has played a mediation role in the crisis, initially reacted angrily to the military takeover, imposing sanctions and cutting trade and financial ties. But that anger seems to have faded, and the sanctions were lifted after a transitional president was named. That post went to 70-year-old former defence minister Baden Dau. Meanwhile, German armed forces are continuing to train Malian troops as part of the EU's training mission there. Military operations are going ahead, even though the coronavirus pandemic has made cooperation more difficult. Despite an enormous international military presence, the security situation in the country has continued to deteriorate. There are more than 10,000 international soldiers stationed in Mali, including those from the UN Stabilisation Mission MINUSMA, which is considered the most dangerous Blue Helmet mission in the world. Thomas Schiller from the Konrad Adenauer Foundation in Bamako says he supports a rethink of the international commitment on the ground. He believes Mali cannot be pulled out of the crisis by military means alone, because the main problem isn't terrorism, he says.
It's only a symptom. The fragile states are the main problem, and that has become abundantly clear in Mali in particular. Strengthening these states must be the international community's central goal. What certainly needs to happen more than it has so far is for states to be supported on the ground, in their core functions, the areas of justice, territorial administration, financial administration, tax administration. If those areas aren't functioning well, then there's no foundation for economic development.
Political scientists Barema Mamadou Kone and Thomas Schiller say that further instability will only play into the hands of the jihadists. That's why many experts have significant fears about the transition phase and high expectations for the upcoming elections, because they could set the course for the future of Mali and the entire region.
DW.